Today on
Doomed!
Today on Doomed, more like what's been going on the past 2 weeks or so. I take 1 week off, and not even, I was trying to stay off the grid as much as possible. Take 1 week off though, a week and a half sort of. And apparently I missed out on everything. We pulled out of Afghanistan? What? When did this happen? CM Punk returns to pro wrestling? And that's maybe an issue to discuss for the second half of the show, or maybe another podcast entirely. But anyway, point being, a lot has happened in this past week and a half, and I needed to have an episode to sort of update me on what's going on, get me back into the swing of things. And let me pull us up here on the screen. Who better to join me to do so than my guest on this episode, Zach Patrizzo of Salon. Thank you for joining me today, Zach.
Thank you for having me again, Matt.
Now, I got to say, you're back on this show probably maybe quicker than any other guest. Now, I'm not saying you aren't going to be back on this show. You definitely were, but usually I try to, you know, I have a guest on, maybe I try to milk it for, you know, at least a couple of months before I bring them back on so it doesn't get repetitive. But hey, man, so much happened. You covered so much of it. And also, you were at the Mike Lindell Cyber Symposium live. And so I was just like, screw my arbitrary rules. It's my show. It makes no sense to not have a guest on if they got something good, and in this case, many things good. So here you are. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, I think last time I was on talking about my adventures at CPAC, of course, down in Dallas. So now we're talking MyPillow stuff. It's great to be back. Love the show.
Oh, thank you. And I love having you on. Now, I guess, you know, there's a lot to talk about. You know, for the teaser I put out on social media, I said we got to talk about Mike Lindell. We got to talk about Roger Stone. We got to talk about who else? Mark Levin. That one I can't wait to get to, but we'll keep that one for the end, I guess. But let's start. Let's now go back. Jeez, it's been about 2 weeks, but that's fine. I actually discussed this on my last show before I took a week off last week. So I did talk about the Cyber Symposium on the August 12th show. But I talked about it with a few clips that I'd seen online and from my own viewing, just dipping in and out of the live stream. You know, basically the summary was Mike Lindell's big cyber symposium, a dud. But we're not here to just rehash something we already talked about. There's something way different about this show and this discussion we're about to have. And that's because, no, you did not watch the live stream from the comfort of your own home like I did. You were there.
I was.
You spent 3 days. What was it, 12 hours a day? Was that how long the thing was?
Almost, yeah. 12 hours a day, dinner at 4:30, and it went on sometimes until like 10 p.m. at night.
And you were there 3 days doing that. What time would it start?
Most days would get kind of kicked off around 8. So sometimes longer than 12 hours.
Jeez, so you basically like camped out there every day.
Yeah. No, I was in Sioux Falls hanging out with Mike Lindell for like a solid 3 days. And word is on the street that he stayed up for all 72 hours. But who knows?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. He certainly has probably done those 72-hour no sleep binges before, knowing his history. but, you know, I got to say, did they serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner, by the way? Did you get served meals and everything?
They did. It was an interesting ordeal. It was dinner at 4:30. It was breakfast super early. And some of the meals were, I think, questionable at best. I'm not a picky eater, but, you know, it seemed as though the green beans that, you know, were from a couple days ago, you know, had a weird odor to them. It was strange stuff.
Wow. Give me an example of something that, that they served there.
Yeah. So there was one dinner where it was like this roast beef that, you know, roast beef, it's a hit or miss type of thing, but they had roast beef there. They had this corn that was like gray. It wasn't like yellow at all. It's just straight up like gray corn. And then these green beans that had this really weird odor to them, at least a couple days old, maybe a couple months old. So it was just it was like an old military style hall, and it seemed like the food was kind of from that, you know, perhaps 70s era.
Was it catered? We're getting into the hard hitting stuff here, obviously, but was it catered? Or because I could totally picture Mike Lindell, you know, preparing like a week before, cooking the meals for the 3-day event and bringing them in his tinfoil trays or whatever. Sure, he's got a lot of tinfoil at home. So, I mean, I'm sure he had some to spare.
It wasn't catered. It was more so like baked and made by the facility. And then this arena that we were in was kind of this old military hall. It kind of had that bingo vibes type of feel to it. That kind of older 80s decor, if you will.
So sort of like a VFW hall.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me about this event. So tell me a little bit about the venue. Was it a VFW hall? I mean, why South Dakota? I think I might have discussed being that, you know, COVID restrictions, and Mike Lindell apparently lives not so far from there. And tell me a little bit about the venue and why and the whole atmosphere and why South Dakota.
Yeah, I mean, it was a wild 3 days. Got in there the first day a little bit late, and I was kind of coming into Sioux Falls, I'd never been to a place kind of like it, and was kind of curious. And you know, I think we had discussed this on the show before, but I'd covered Mike Lindell for about a year and a half prior to going to the conference. So I've been with Mike kind of since the beginning, since it all started with his famous like Rose Garden speech, till of course now. And I was pumped to be there, got there initially, and it kind of got kicked off like kind of these very monotonous and boring speeches from like all these professors. Kind of started out day one, no real data type of stuff. Started palling around, saw Steve Bannon there, who of course is kind of like the go-to pusher for all things Mike Lindell conspiracy theories. So saw him,
actually always been interesting to me, because Steve Bannon is obviously a terrible person, but he also has seemed a little bit smarter than the other people in that world. And I always felt like, you know, he played up these people to get what he needed, but at the end of the day, he knows they're all a bunch of cranks. And It seemed like since Trump's been out of office, he's sort of been, you know, there's a lot of clips going around of some crazy on his show, and Steve Bannon's looking like the reasonable one, questioning whatever they're saying on his show with lots of caution and very little belief.
Yeah, exactly. I think you hit that nail on the head. I think Steve Bannon sees much of this as an opportunity to almost grift, right? He might not necessarily believe all these things that are coming out of these people's mouths, but like he does it in a way where he's not necessarily legally liable and kind of poses himself as this like third party journalist type, right? That's kind of on his daily podcast called The War Room. It's this kind of podcast TV hybrid thing, website show. And that's the way he kind of bills himself as this like journalist, third party, but yet he pushes things, right? Like he has a promo code for the MyPillow, right? So it's like
he's pushing that hard at the event. Yeah. Oh boy.
Very hard. But he does it in a way where he distances himself and watches out for, you know, legal liability issues, I think, in a way that perhaps is smarter than your average right-wing grifter, right? Right? I think Steve Bannon has been around for a while. Right.
Yeah, he's still on a lot of like podcast networks and everything. Like you could download him on Apple Pod. Like he's careful to make sure he stays on those platforms.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I definitely think, look, he used to run Breitbart, and through Breitbart had some tough times that he was able to keep Breitbart alive. So I don't think he's, you know, as you know, I think he's a lot better operator than like Jacob Wool, right? Like, you know, there's a difference.
Right. So you're at this event, South Dakota. It's close to Mike Lindell's house. You know, he didn't go to bed. We have already established. I don't even know. We'll get to this in a second. I'm like getting ahead of myself. So you're at this 3-day, 12-plus-hour event per day. Geez, I can't even imagine. And it's a big nothing. He never really presents this data that everyone was waiting for. His big reveal, which I guess was supposed to come on the last day, gets ruined because his data expert, his cyber expert, leaks to the Washington Times, I believe, the night before. Mm-hmm. So the night of the second day, that they don't got nothing. So what was the atmosphere there? Like, you were at the event when this Washington Times leak came out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That was that second night going into the third day that Josh Merritt, one of Lindell's own cyber experts, who, you know, was one of Lindell's own guys, right? He had said, look, this is a pile of nothing. And he called it a quote unquote turd that, you know, Lindell kind of wanted shined into a diamond, right? So it was a very, very, I think for Lindell, you know, it was kind of surreal for him and he didn't know exactly what to do. So he just started spinning. I mean, you just saw him up on stage that third day, just starting going bananas, just spinning circles, claiming that I was an Antifa infiltrate, that somehow Salon was behind this mass conspiracy to smuggle Antifa activists in. Right. And there were no anti-fascist activists there. No,
besides yourself, the
middle
of course,
of South Dakota. Right. It's literally the middle of South Dakota. It's one of those things that lives in the minds of like many like right wing pundits. Right. Like, I was listening into Mark Levin, and we'll get to him a little later, but I was listening into Mark Levin this past weekend, and Mark Levin said he alluded to Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, and the Secretary of State being all part of Antifa because they were wearing black, literally. I'm like, this is nuts, right? So it's something weird in the sight guys of like all right wing personalities. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh yeah, everything is Antifa. Antifa is hiding behind the bushes, ready to jump out and steal their newspaper in the morning. You know, I mean, it's incredible that everything is easy to blame for them on Antifa. But one thing that did happen though, that I believe they tried to blame on Antifa, and when I went away, this was still up in the air, so you could maybe update me on this. Mm-hmm. Mike Lindell had claimed on that last day, on the morning of that last day, he looked really frazzled on day three when he got there. And he claimed he was attacked at his hotel room the day before. And as I'm leaving the online sphere to purify my mind for a week, I saw that he had claimed that someone had the attack was the form of someone coming over, pretending to be a friendly, asking for a photo. And when he embraced Mike Lindell, he put his arm around him, and Mike Lindell felt a sharp pain in his armpit.
Yeah.
And at that moment, that was the attack, by the way. That was the attack that we're talking about. And Mike Lindell had been floating that he thought maybe this guy was the Antifa infiltrator they were waiting for, or some attacker, I don't know, a deep state undercover agent, whatever he think they may be. And he even said, like, I don't know if they like injected me with something there or poked me with something. Mm-hmm. What happened there? Did I miss something, or did we just leave it there?
Yeah, no, this is absolutely nuts. So on going into that third day yet again, what, you know, I think there are theories that I have after speaking with a lot of people that were one of the witnesses and others about what actually went down. But what Lindell claims is exactly what you just outlined, right? It's that he was quote unquote attacked by this kind of like bad faith actor who wanted to take a selfie, yet, you know, took an orange device and basically stabbed it into Lindell's side. And Lindell had hypothesized that somehow I was behind this attack, somehow other forces were behind this attack. I don't think that's the case. I think it was probably a jokester who, according to one of the people that I spoke with, who's like this pro-Trump congressional candidate who has no reason to lie, right? Of course, like he's someone who would be considered a friendly to Lindell, right? I mean, this super pro-Trump pundit, he called it like a nothing burger, quote unquote, right? And he claimed to me that it was a tangerine in the attacker's hand, right? So like there's a big spread there between what happened and what witnesses are saying happened.
I mean, I just want to say the reason I knew Mike Lindell's version of events so well, you might have noticed I even knew some things that only someone who was there at the moment could have possibly known, and that's because I was the attacker. I'm coming out right now. I'm saying I inserted now. But I mean, it could have, it sounds like it could have even been an overzealous supporter, like really happy to see Lindell, and he squeezed him. And I don't know, maybe the dude didn't cut his nails or something, and he dug him into Lindell, giving him a big old hug. I don't know. It just seemed so ridiculous. Now,
yeah. There's also another aspect to the story. One of the, this other guy claims that like there was no, this pro-Trump congressional candidate who's kind of like, his story's kind of evolved a little bit, which is a little bit strange. But like one of his claims is that like the attack never happened, and Lindell just like went up to his room in the elevator after someone had said something like not nice to him, right? So there's like these weird iterations of the story, and they're seemingly, you know, I think Sioux Falls police was looking into this, had looked into it, and basically said, like, you know, we're not going to release anything now. You know, we're not doing confirm or deny. We're looking into this. But when I was speaking with people, and I was speaking to them, you know, in my capacity as a journalist, because, you know, Mike Lindell had accused me of things, kind of wide ranging, different charges, different criminal charges he was accusing me of, which were, of course, false. One of the things the investigators, I mean, like when I was talking to them about this, like many of them were laughing, right? Like people weren't like, they were like, okay, like they kind of got like the writing on the wall, so to speak. And they kind of understood, okay, this is getting out of control, and stuff just isn't adding up. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, it's, imagine being, having to look into this. I can only, it seems like a waste.
Now, there was this joke too posed on Twitter, which I guess some detectives had seen, which some people were calling it like a run by fruiting, which is like a phrase off of like Mrs. Doubtfire and stuff like that.
Ah.
So it turned into kind of this joke about the tangerine, even in kind of the police department.
Damn, when the police are even mocking you, I mean, jeez. Now, I gotta ask. It seems like this would be, The way this event went, it seems like this would be a major blow to the legitimacy of whoever legitimate he possibly could have been. But in those circles, let's say Mike Lindell's, the MyPillow guy, is a legitimate expert in this world. He was going to unveil the big election fraud that stole the presidency from Donald Trump. This was going to be the big moment where it all came together, and it did not pan out at all for Lindell. Did this strike a blow to Mike Lindell's legitimacy? Like, did the right completely turn on Lindell when I signed off for the week, when I went away for that week? Is Lindell now a joke to the whole right and is now no longer even in those circles?
It's a really good question. The short answer is absolutely not, right? The more detailed answer is, look, I think some people are starting to kind of see the writing on the wall, and some people are starting to notice that, you know, many of Lindell's hypotheses aren't necessarily coming true. One of the most prominent being Roger Stone, of course, right? Roger Stone came out this past week and said, look, you know, Mike hasn't produced it. He doesn't think Trump's going to be reinstated. You know, stop speaking, you know, pushing bizarre conspiracies. So I think that is notable, that Stone's coming out and speaking against Lindell. But largely, absolutely not. Look, Steve Bannon was there, saw the entire thing. I mean, the guy knows that it's a pile full of crap, and is still pushing Lindell, right? So many on the right, and everyone from Diamond and Silk to Steve Bannon to you name it, Dan Bongino still hawks, you know, MyPillow products. So I think there's plenty of support still for Lindell.
Now, didn't he come out now and he's got a new date on when Trump is going to be reinstated? Like, it was August 13th, that Friday when I signed off for the week. And yeah. I said I need to, and I was off the grid. That was the day that Trump was supposed to, according to Lindell, ascend to his rightful place in the White House once again. Of course, that didn't happen. So what's the new date?
The new date is New Year's Eve, or New Year's, you know, kind of the 31st. So by the end of the year, Trump will be back in office, is Lindell's claim now. And I think it's important just because we keep seeing, you know, it's important to at least highlight this just because we keep seeing the 2020 conspiracy theories continue to come back. They're not going away, right?
Why December 31st, though?
That's a great question. I think it's just pushing the can down the road personally. But, I think 2021 is kind of the end of it, is kind of what they're looking at now.
Right. Well, Lindell, I look forward to seeing his next events. I'm sure he's got something else. Does he have another event in the pipeline, or does he still claim he has the smoking gun, or is it just like I'm guessing? Or is he just like I'm guessing? December 31st now.
No, I mean his big thing is he still has it. He still has the packet captures, which all the experts that Salon spoke to at the Cyber Symposium, we had our own expert there who had, all the credentials under the sun. Other people had their experts there. CNN had an expert there. All of our experts came out of this room and said, look, this is a bunch of BS. But Lindell still claims to this day that he has the packet captures to the 2020 election. Currently, there's at least one person who's going after the $5 million who he, you know, that he had proposed giving out if someone was able to disprove his claims.
All right.
So yeah. So I think, look, he still claims he's got it, but all our experts say that's a load of crap. I mean, there was even from the conservative fact-checking site, The Dispatch, who, that site is, it leans right. And, their takeaway even from the event was, look, this is a bunch of nothing, right?
Didn't he kick out a Gateway pundit person too? Like that is, to me, that is like you don't. I don't know how. I don't know what's more conspiratorial than claiming that the Gateway pundit is against Trump and your claims, your right-wing conspiratorial claim. Like, I just, how'd that go down?
Yeah, so this was an event that happened on day two. Myself and another reporter from a right of center outlet were kind of sitting on some high risers above the event, kind of looking down on the main stage, what they were calling like the deck plates of like this war or something like this. And when I was sitting there, I was just kind of hanging out on my computer, filing some stories and kind of looking on Twitter, stuff like that, right? And all of a sudden, this Gateway pundit starts like coming up behind me and just started recording my computer, like no apparent reason, just recording my computer. Then I get up and I'm like, dude, like I kind of see what's going on here, like what's going on, like kicksand, like get out of here, I'm like, what's going on? And right away he shoves a camera in my face and starts, asking me all these like questions and stuff. And long story short, this guy had been really like kind of abrasive and abusive to this other reporter who I was working with a couple minutes earlier. So things kind of got carried away, and this guy started shoving just a camera in my face, asking me these ridiculous questions. And I said, yes, you guys are conspiracy theorists. Like, yes, you guys are, I was just telling him the truth. He was asking questions, and I decided, okay, if you really want to know, sure, I'm happy to say you're a conspiracy theorist because you are. But long story short, security had kind of noticed that. And one of the rules outlined by Lindell was that there was none of that type of stuff allowed at the conference. So this guy basically violated Lindell's rules. And so long story short, security removes him. He tries to come back into the event, and about 10 security officers frog march him out. But then this story, actually, what really happened gets twisted by the Gateway pundit. They put out like this weird hit piece that doesn't mention names but insinuates things and is, clearly defamatory. But anyways, they spin it in a way where they claim that basically he was kicked out because he approached Antifa activists, right? So then this is how the whole Antifa claim starts to gain speed. And then, I think the Gateway Pundit article was basically kind of the starting point for Lindell to claim, look, Antifa's here. But, the Gateway Pundit did it in such a way that just was completely, false, and left out that, their reporter initially was harassing a female reporter who was there, who was also a Facebook fact checker, which they don't like because, of course, they get hit on Facebook for pushing false fake news, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of layers to this, but long story short, I think the Gateway Pundit article was kind of the start to what had become of the Antifa claims.
Now, to end this part of our conversation with Lindell, and we'll move on to the next topic. But when I talked about the Cyber Symposium in the last episode of this show, 2 weeks ago, I had a conversation with listeners about whether we think Mike Lindell is the grifter, or the griftee. Because he seems like someone who is a true believer. Like, he's not one of those MAGA guys, one of those right-wingers who are doing it simply for the grift. Now, I know I just said they were constantly promoting the MyPillow stuff. But I actually think in that case, that's Mike Lindell trying to make the best of the situation he's in, where he has, I think, lost a lot of money from pursuing this. And, you know, he needs to promote MyPillow to his new fan base, who are right-wingers and conservatives, in order to try to make up for the money he's lost. But I still think he's a net negative. But he continues on because he really believes this stuff. Like, this isn't someone who's like, you know, who is making not much money and all of a sudden hit it rich, appealing to the right. This is someone who had a broader customer base, was making a lot of money already, and decided to go all in on something he straight up believed. Now, you know, you could be both the grifter and the griftee. I could understand that argument too. But I do think there are more people probably taking money from Mike Lindell by convincing him he's onto something and keeping this whole thing going.
Absolutely. I was speaking with another reporter who was, you know, from the Washington Times, and, you know, we had spoken kind of briefly about how, you know, this might have all been kind of a play by some more shady Trump world characters who many listeners might have not have ever heard of before. You know, people like Mary Fawning, these people that had kind of trafficked in a lot of misinformation to the Gateway Pundit and released information to right-wing sites that was just clearly false, you know, claims about the election, you know, in Nevada that ballots were being like hidden and there were like Biden buses that rolled up in the middle of the night. This was a claim that was repeated by like Matt Schlapp, who's like a frequent Fox News guest. So there were a lot of debunked conspiracy theories coming from, you know, Fawning and others kind of loosely associated with her. And that's who we believe, you know, might have possibly, and Lindell even admits, you know, Mary Fawning and other kind of fraudsters. Dennis Montgomery is another name. This is a fraudster who's wanted on charges out of like Nevada, I believe. So it's all these kind of grifter types that probably sold Lindell a pile of crap. And Lindell truly believes, you know, it's legit.
It's, you know, it's incredible to see him just throw his money at this. It's a it's a losing endeavor. But hey, if this is how a rich guy wants to waste his money, then by all means.
Definitely not. I don't think he's a grifter. I really do believe that he believes in what he's pushing, like 110%. Like, I spent so many hours on the phone with this guy that, you know, he would call me up at, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning telling me about stuff. And I have a hard time believing that he's not legitimately behind what he's saying and that it's a front. I really don't think it's a ploy to sell pillows either. I really think he unfortunately believes all this garbage.
Now, I just, in the YouTube chat, someone had a great idea to put together a poll. So apparently YouTube has a new poll option. So in the YouTube chat, you can vote right now, youtube.com/Matt Binder. Go to the live stream. You can vote whether he's the grifter or he's the one being grifted, the griftee. Do that, and at the end of this interview, I'll hit up the results. And we'll find out what the audience thinks, Zach. So now,
interesting.
Yeah, it'll be right now.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. That'll be cool.
Right now, I could tell you that grifted, he's the griftee, he's the one being grifted is in the lead. But we'll see at the end of the show. Zach, let's move on now to, you mentioned Roger Stone. And I've been completely out of this whole thing. So I don't know. You have to completely. I can't add anything. So I'm depending on you here, buddy. What is going on with Roger Stone and Getter, the social media, the latest conservative social media platform launched by Trump associate Jason Miller?
Yeah, so Getter is, of course, like you said, the right-wing up-and-coming site. I would say it probably is starting to outpace and probably, quite frankly, already has outpaced Parler and Gab. I mean, Getter is
Gab is no surprise, but...
Sure. I think I would say I'm definitely among, like, these Trump types, right? Like, all the former Trump associates on it, from Gorka to, like, you know, Tim Murphy, all these former Trump-related people, which I think makes it semi-powerful. But beyond that, look, I think, you know, Steve Bannon is on it as well. But furthermore, Roger Stone was banned, was suspended from Getter. What was this? Not last night, but the night before. I'm losing track of the days here. Wednesday night. So long story short, he's suspended, goes to Gab that same night and starts just bad-mouthing Steve Bannon, bad-mouthing Jason Miller. I mean, fighting words. I mean, really,
Why Steve Bannon, though? Does Steve Bannon have a stake in Getter?
Not a stake in Getter, but he's kind of one of the main proponents of Getter. He's been one of the main people kind of pushing it. And dating back to, like, 2019, Roger Stone and Steve Bannon have always had this weird beef because, like, Bannon... Bannon testified against him.
Right, and Bannon also replaced Stone as Trump's campaign manager, which I know they did that because they needed to, apparently, because Stone has even said it was his choice. But I'm sure that didn't, knowing the type of person Stone is, I'm sure that ruffled his feathers, whoever would have taken his place.
Yeah, and I think ever since Bannon testifying against him and kind of ratting him out or whatever have you, and you know, ever since there's been a weird war there. I know, you know, Roger Stone claims that Bannon and Miller are like lovers of sorts, and he also claims that, you know, like Steve Bannon is eating like cannibalism type of stuff, eating his sidekick who is Raheem Kassam, which is like this former Breitbart editor guy. So there's a lot of drama, there. But anyways, Roger Stone was of course suspended from Getter, and that just caused, you know, kind of World War IX. He claims he's being censored. And then I would say halfway through yesterday, Jason Miller about around midday came out and said, "Whoa, this was kind of like a mistake. We didn't mean to." But the damage had kind of already been done, and Stone was clearly ticked off. So they reinstated his account and claimed it was due to a lot of Roger Stone bots. Unsure how true that claim is. But look, it made a lot of people upset. I saw my tweet being screenshotted and shared on Getter as like, "Oh, Getter is censoring people." So like clearly, people weren't pleased on Getter. You know, I think this question of content moderation kind of comes up again. You know, in regards to platforms, which you have plenty of experience dealing with.
Right. I mean, it's really interesting how these guys, and when I say these guys, I mean all these platforms, Getter, Parler, Gab, Rumble, BitChute, which maybe not so much as the others, but they all have their lines that they refuse to have crossed. And in a lot of ways... those lines are usually even more conservative, and I use that in a sense of like less freedom, like they like to espouse freedom to post whatever you want, freedom of speech. These sites usually tamp down on that even harder than the mainstream sites. Like, you know, adult film stars, sex workers, they can post their stuff on Twitter, no problem. I know there's other mainstream networks they can't, but on Twitter, for example, they can post, hell, they can post clips of their sex scenes in films and no problem. On these other sites, especially like Parler and Gab, like they just post like an erotic photo, like something that would have been on the cover of like Maxim magazine back in like the 90s. And all of a sudden, that person could be banned.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the funniest things was this Sonic hedgehog porn that was popping up on Getter, right? So this is like furry porn on Getter. And this was content that was clearly making Miller and the leaders of Getter, the leadership team at Getter, upset, because then there were like leftists on Getter, like, you know, complete trolls. But there were leftists on Getter that were upset that their accounts were being banned and claiming that their posts were being taken down, right? So, like, you know, I think censorship, whatever that, you know, whatever. But, like, in a way, Getter has the same type of issues and you know, just in different ways, right? Like, they're taking the same type of measures to take down certain content as any other platform, yet they claim to be, you know, this bastion of free speech, which, you know, I don't know. I don't know how true that is.
I always say, listen, if you want to be this free speech network, as in, you know, and free speech, again, it doesn't really... Free speech is whatever they want it to be. It's their platform.
Exactly.
But if you actually want like an anything goes platform, then I mean, go for it. I've never seen one though, because no one wants that to exist. I mean, mm-hmm. the idea that there is some, I would love to see it actually where, and by the way, this also means that you cannot promote content that you like. You can't have an algorithm that's recommending shit, because once again, that's putting your finger, your thumb on the scale and saying that some speech is better than others. If you want this free speech bastion, you just got to let it fly and let the free market of ideas just, you know, that's my thing. That's my thing. No one has created this network that actually would mean what they are saying they want, because they don't really want that. They just want their ideas to be heard the most.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, there are trolls that are posting pictures of Sonic's smelly feet, and then they claim that they're getting banned on Getter, right? So it's like the whole thing is just a mess. And I think, look, it's just, you know, it's hard to say, at least now, but you know, I think after a couple of months, these platforms kind of fade away and everyone returns to Twitter, right? Like this is the case study with Dan Bongino. He said he was leaving. 4 months later, he pops back on Twitter, right? So it's like, they'll be back. You know, they're kind of like, you know, Pokemons or something. Boomerangs. They always come back.
I gotta get on Getter. I didn't realize that they took the torch from Parler. That's crazy.
It's really sad on Parler these days. like I hate to say it, but like Sean Hannity comment is only getting like low engagement. I mean, I remember on Parler when like people were upvoting things like 2,000 times type of stuff, but now you'll see like 100 upvotes on a Sean Hannity post and you're like, wow, it's kind of sad. And when you look at the Chartbeat analytics, like it was up at like 30 million page views and now it's down to like 3.
Damn.
Per month.
How the mighty fall, right?
Yeah.
So now let's talk about... So wait, before we move on, actually. So Roger Stone back on Getter officially, as in they unbanned his account. Is he using it, though, or is he still declaring war?
I don't think he's using it. He's mostly on Gab kind of declaring war and going on to Alex Jones's conspiracy InfoWars show daily and kind of just railing against you know, Steve Bannon and Jason Miller. And kind of claim censorship still.
I love that he went to Gab after Getter, because honestly, Gab seemed like the right place for Roger Stone from the get-go.
I would have loved to see the day and age at like Roger, because I got into this in like, what, 2019? So I think Stone was banned before I ever made it onto Twitter. But like, I would have loved to like interact with Roger Stone on Twitter. It would have been hilarious.
Oh, he was an interesting guy on Twitter, but
was he
real? He would just like go after people like any other person would. Like he was just like, it's like, holy shit, Roger Stone is in my account. Call, like, if you were like a woman, it's like, oh, Roger Stone's in my account calling me a slut. It's like, in my reply, he was just like any other Twitter a-hole, you know?
Got it. Fair enough.
Let's now talk now. This is what I really wanted to talk about. This was a good one. So Mark Levin, he wrote a book and it's a bestseller, right? Can you tell me a little bit about this book? Like how it's like topping the charts, right?
It's called American Marxism. Yeah. And, of course this is the Fox News host, you know, radio host, kind of media mogul, right wing media mogul, if you will, Mark Levin, who, for years, and I think fair to say almost decades now, has really dominated the right-wing media sphere as kind of this pundit. I know, like, you know, friends, uncles are always, you know, talking about Mark Levin and talking about, you know, everything about Mark Levin. You know, they listen to him around D.C. on the radio, you know, on the way home from work type of thing. And, American Marxism topped the charts, was number one slot, I believe, at one point for, maybe still is, for books, you know, on the New York Times list. And, you know, clearly being, you know, bolstered by Fox News and other right wing pundits. But this was a big mess up for him.
Now, I'm going to play this clip. Yeah. I don't want to get ahead of myself here because I want to see if the audience realizes what's going on here. Now, someone put together this clip. I want to make sure I properly give them credit. Where did I – what happened to this? Give me 1 second. Where did I – what did I do with this? There was a clip here from – oh, my God. I can't believe I lost it. Give me 1 second.
I can send it to you here.
I have the clip, actually. I just wanted to properly give credit to this person who okay. I can't find it anymore. Unbelievable. Well, someone put together this this compilation of Mark Levin talking about really what is the backbone of his entire book. And it's this school where basically a lot of leftist Marxist thought, a lot of critical theory was basically, you know, it was the birthplace of it. Let's hear about this school. Let me know if you catch what's going on here. What the weird thing going on here is.
Critical race theory, which comes out of critical theory, that was invented by a Marxist from the Franklin School of Marxism. Okay, when you look at the background of critical race theory, this comes out of critical theory. Where does that come from? It comes from a school called the Franklin School that comes out of Berlin. These are a group of Marxists. One of the gentlemen fled Hitler, came to the United States. He became a very prominent professor. His name is Herbert Marcuse.
From the Franklin School of Marxism. Mm-hmm. The Franklin School.
So if you're not sure what's going on here, maybe you're not.
It looks like some people in the chat got it, actually.
Yeah, it does. Apparently, Mark Levin, who wrote this entire book about Marxism, that's topping the charts. It's the talk of all the conservative world right now. He apparently doesn't know the foundation of what he's talking of like the topic. Like, he doesn't know what he's talking about at all. It's not the Franklin School. It's the Frankfurt School. And did he say Berlin, if I'm not mistaken, or?
He did say Berlin. Yes.
It wasn't in Berlin either. It was in what is now modern-day Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hence the name, right?
Right.
The name implies where it's located. Yeah, this is just like a classic screw-up. I mean, look, he claims to be an expert. The name of the book is what he claims to be an expert in, yet is missing like the most fundamental facts associated with that topic, right? I mean, it is so bad. I thought this would be such a bigger story just because, look, it's a Fox News host who literally claims to be an expert on a topic, who is the number one book in the country, and is completely, just claiming things that are just factually incorrect, right? And I think Fox News is always so quick to point out our errors, but yet, you know, we haven't heard an on-air correction yet. We haven't heard Fox News remedy, you know, issue a correction, you know. So it was just today that the publisher, Simon & Schuster, had reached out to me after I'd reached out a couple times, asking about what they're going to do about it. And they said that there will be a correction in the book. But look, there are already 400,000 copies sold, right?
And the thing is, again, like I said, this isn't something like, oh, there was a typo, or, you know, there was a random fact that was just used like as an analogy or to bolster some like small point made in the book. You know, not something that undermines the entire basis of what this guy claims to talk about. No, like, he clearly doesn't know what he's talking about. This is not a mistake you make if you're talking about Marxism. Well, first of all, I don't want to get too into it, but one of the earliest episodes of this program, I think it was either episode 24 or 25. You can go back, doomedcast.com. It might have even been one of the earliest YouTube episodes. I had on a guest, and we did an entire episode on cultural Marxism, which again is a thing that doesn't exist because Marxism is not a cultural thing. Marxism is an economic theory, an economic thought. And basically, cultural Marxism is their way of being very anti-Semitic without saying that they hate the Jews. So if you want to go check out more about cultural Marxism and where that comes into play, and what I'm sure is in Mark Levin's book, you can check out that episode. But you can't get the Franklin School. You can't do that. You can't say the Franklin School when writing about this stuff, because it just shows you're a bullshit artist. Now, I wonder if he even wrote the book. I mean, clearly, I don't think he did. I mean, got to be a ghostwriter.
That was one of my big questions. Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, it also, I think it's important to point out, it wasn't just on TV. He wasn't just saying this on TV. He was saying it in his book too, right? Like, he was making these BS claims in the book. And it's just like, how did an editor not see this? Or like, who was writing the book? Like, there's so many questions I asked Simon and Schuster. And of course, I don't, you know, they didn't address many of them or any of them. But like, what's going on here? You know?
Right. It's incredible. It's incredible. I love that. I saw that video and I was like, this is great. I heard it and I was like, wait a minute. Wait, hold on. Because it's so like, if you don't, that's the thing. That's why he's able to get away with it. Because this isn't like regular, like this isn't like a topic that is just like a well-known thing. Like it's not like, oh, I know that person got the singer of the Rolling Stones or the Beatles wrong. Because everyone knows, who plays bass in the Beatles or sings for the Rolling Stones. We're talking like something that if you don't know the topic and the issue at hand, you're not going to catch it. But if you do know the topic and the issue at hand, it's like, holy shit, this guy has got no clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how he recovers from something like this. No, I'm joking. He brushed it off, and on radio, he was claiming that Salon was the only outlet to really write about this because it had kind of circulated on Twitter, but we kind of dug into it a bit more. And he said that we're somehow communists destroying the country and he was going to expose us this week. He's yet to do that, but we'll see.
All right. Well, I look forward to Mark Levin exposing those leftist reporters over at Saloon.
it's funny, when I was back at Mediate too, he like used to call me like a low IQ buffoon, and like, you know, back when he was on Twitter, he used to get all upset. He called me like one time he said I'm with Media Matters, which I was never with Media Matters, but he said that I don't know the difference between carbon dioxide and like hydrogen or something. I don't know. He's a weird guy. He's such a strange guy.
Oh boy. Oh man. Was there anything else I wanted to talk to you about? Oh, I didn't mention this one to you. So if you don't off the top of your head, that's cool. But I saw that you had some coverage of over the last week or so about Lauren Boebert, my favorite congresswoman. She's my favorite congresswoman because she is the daughter, without a shadow of a doubt, of pro wrestling superstar Stan Lane, even though he won't admit to it.
She definitely is. Yeah, I mean, I wrote an entire feature on this. Yeah, no, it's without question that's the case. Oh, yeah. I mean, the core documents.
Right. I had David Bixenspan on this show previously to talk about it. And yeah, he when your article came out, he was giving it props because he dug deep into this stuff and he found some documents no one else did. And then after he did that, you guys found some additional ones and like that really like, you know, sealed the deal. So like it was an impressive all around, quite honestly. Lauren Boebert could be on Monday Night Raw right now, but instead she's in Congress, unfortunately. I would probably have she probably would have been a great heel, by the way. I think I would have been a big fan of pro wrestler Lauren Boebert if she's just as, you know, she's just as terrible as she is as a congresswoman. I'm sure I would have been a big fan because as a wrestling heel, that's a great thing to be. But she has been caught red-handed doing some sort of underhanded things when it comes to filing reports about how much or her husband makes, or what he does for work, or and then she also, like, there was another thing she didn't report. Tell me the lowdown, Zach.
Yeah. So more recently, like within the past week and a half-ish, Lauren Boebert has kind of been under new scrutiny for filings. And her FEC filings are patchy work at best, right? Like just bad stuff, not disclosing clear conflicts of interest. And one of the biggest conflicts of interest that I believe the Daily Beast first stumbled upon, the Washington Post, and then Salon ran some additional investigative work on what occurred. But it has to do with a lot of different parts. There's an airplane that Salon looked into, but I think the larger thing is kind of this idea that while she was pushing to loosen drilling regulations, you know, her husband was one of the foremost kind of like consultants when it came to energy in the area within her district, right? So there's like a clear conflict of interest. She didn't disclose it on any of her forms. And here he is this year in 2021 making, you know, close to $750,000 doing this consulting work with this firm called Terra Energy. So, it's the height of conflicts of interest in Washington, D.C., and yet she didn't disclose it and, you know, isn't answering basic questions about why she didn't, make that clear. So she faces, possible issues with the House Ethics Committee, and potentially is going to land in some hot water because, of course, those violations aren't Republican, Democrat; they're just violations, right?
Right. Now, what was this? Looking at this article you wrote, sale of a cargo plane remains a mystery.
Yeah, so this was a cargo plane that was associated with, it was like this kind of like Cessna Cub Red type of airplane. Not a huge airplane, but this was without question, like, you know, a couple $100,000 plane and valuable. And it's unclear exactly like how she used it, if she used it as a way to like, you know, avoid paying some taxes, use it as a vehicle to write off taxes. Much of this is still a mystery we're trying to unravel. But like, you know, it's kind of super weird stuff. And there's kind of a pattern. We started covering Lauren Boebert. I don't know if I've talked to you about this story, but she took like this tour that was like super off the grid ahead of the January 6th incident. And I found some postings from her son on Instagram talking about this tour and stuff. And, you know, it's just a pattern of weird behavior that's kind of patchy that just doesn't follow the rules with Lauren Boebert. Like nothing does, right? From like an off hours Capitol tour ahead of the January 6th event to these weird filings to everything. It's just like, it's very strange.
Yeah. I know her husband, apparently. We were just talking about, you know, those missing filings. Her husband apparently makes like $1 million working for an energy firm.
Yeah, Jason. So Jason, that's Terra Energy, and he's really well connected in there. And there's, you know, clearly, you know, some type of influence there that's being exerted because Terra Energy is one of the biggest energy producers within that district, within, you know, her district. So, you know, I don't know. We're still getting to the bottom of exactly how much influence, you know, Boebert has, or should I say Jason has over Lauren and over Congress. But, you know, clearly, I think there's some type of tie there. I know Salon found that one of the top Terra Energy personnel had given $500 to the Boebert campaign. So there's clearly some type of tie there, and there's clearly influence as to how much and how important it is. I think largely still remains to be seen, which Salon's, of course, investigating.
Right. I had to ask you because I saw those stories and I was like, ooh, I didn't hear this about Lauren Boebert. This is, you know, the idea that she's, you know, something's weird. I know her husband obviously makes a lot of money, but you don't make that much running some bar and grill in Colorado while claiming you only get paid $1. I'm reading in your report, like,
the business had lost a lot of money,
right? Like, it's one thing, you know, obviously there are, you know, restaurants out there that are doing well, but if you're claiming you're losing money with your restaurant, you know, it seems weird you would own a cargo plane as well. Very bizarre. So Zach, before we end, I'm going to end this poll that I put towards the YouTube chat with 125 votes. Mike Lindell, grifter or grifty? 25% say he's a grifter.
Okay.
75% saying he is the grifted. He is the grifted.
I would love to know why the 25% said what they did. I would love to, if someone wants to chat out why, that would be awesome to hear.
Right, right. By the time they do that, though, but definitely do that. By the time they do that, though, mm-hmm. You'll probably be long gone because the feed's a little bit behind. So, Zachary, thank you so well, what am I just saying? Zachary, as if like I'm not going to promote your entire name. Zachary Patrizzo of Salon. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at ZT Patrizzo. They can find my work at salon.com. Big fan of the show. So thanks for having me on again.
Oh,
this is awesome. It's been fun. I feel like there's always so much that happens on the right, as you know, that, you know, you kind of cover this area too. It seems never ending. So it's always good to be on.
It's like, you know, I've been doing this now for over a decade, and it's like, why you can't take off a week. Why would I take off a week? And of course there are slow weeks sometimes, and slow like means, you know, not that much happening, still things happening, but that week you take off, that's never one of those weeks. The week you take off, for example, like I mentioned at the top of the show, the week you take off is the week we end the 20-year war. You know, that's the week that you take off, apparently. I mean, I didn't do it purposefully, which I'll be talking about in the second half of the show a little bit more. We didn't really talk about it here. But Zachary, oh, by the way, what does the T stand for in ZT Patrizzo, your Twitter name?
That stands for Thomas, a middle name.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a weird username, but you know, whatever, it works.
I was gonna guess Zachary Trump Patrizzo.
No. Oh man. No. But yeah. No. This has been a fun time, and yeah. No. Thank you again for having me on.
Have a good night, man. Always a pleasure. Looking forward to having you on again soon. And really, thank you for coming on. You really were the perfect guest to wean me back in on the first show back.
You know, it's a lot to take in, but you took it in all very well. So have a great rest of the show, and I'll be watching.
All right. Take care, man. Have a great night. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's now go to the second half of the show. But before we do that, we will, gotta just fix my, where is this? Masks, the edges are masked. Okay, I had to fix the green screen there. Before we go to the second half of the show, patreon.com/Matt Binder. That's gonna be, I'm about to warn you guys, this outro is gonna be very, I'm rusty here. But I should also mention, this is, my birthday was on Monday. If you weren't on Twitter, Instagram, or my Facebook, you wouldn't know, but it's my birthday week. I turned 35 on Monday, halfway to 70. Oh boy. I'm getting old. I'm getting old, guys. But this, I guess this would technically, I didn't do a show last week. This is the first show since my birthday. So it's my first show at 35 years old. If I'm rusty, maybe it's not because I took a week off. Maybe it's because I'm an old man and my brain is going, my memory is shot, and I'm drifting to the nursing home and the, retirement home soon. I don't know. Folks, patreon.com/Matt Binder to support this show. Gotta shout out the patrons who joined since the last show. We actually lost a few. I knew that was gonna happen. Just take 1 week off after over a year and a half of shows every week, sometimes two shows a week, and people just can't. People gotta say, yeah. People gotta leave because I'm not giving them content. I get it. But the people who joined since the last show, where are they? Here we go. James C., Lucas D., Robert G., Andrew C., and Shireen N. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. I really, really appreciate your financial support. Again, only financially support this show if you could do so financially. I really appreciate the people who can. And if you can but haven't yet, what are you waiting for? What better show than my first show at 35? I mean, really, I think now is the time to pull the trigger if you can. If you don't want to sign up for a recurring monthly Patreon subscription, you can go to YouTube.com and drop a super chat. It gives me a one-off donation / tip, and you're guaranteed me reading your chat in the second half of the show, which we are going to in just a second. Doomedcast.com for the podcast version of this show. Go to ratethispodcast.com/doomed. That's ratethispodcast.com/doomed to get links to all the places where you could leave podcast reviews. Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, I don't know where else. It's on that site. Please leave a review if you haven't already. It's a big help. Really, it is. You could also support this show by what else can you do? I don't even, if you haven't already subscribed to the YouTube channel, I don't even know what to tell you at this point. YouTube.com/MattBinder, twitch.tv/MattBinder, follow me there as well. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Matt Binder, all other social media platforms, just search Matt Binder. I'll pop up if I'm not at Matt Binder on there. I should get on Rumble, shouldn't I? I just uploaded my Rumble segment from the last show today, like as a separate segment, just to get it up there. I should go on Rumble. I know it's you know, I should get on there, though. Ooh, we just got a Ryan H. becoming a patron right now, getting in right before I jump to the second half of the show. If you are watching live, you can stick around. If you are a patron, you can stick around. And that means if you're watching live and aren't a patron, you could stick around as well, for, the second half of the show. Because, you know, you're live, it's fun to have you guys interacting, so we'll keep you on. If there's anything else I'm forgetting, I forgot it. Happy birthday to me, patrons and live stream watchers. I will see you in just a few short seconds as we go to the second half of the show. For everybody else, I will see you all next time on Doomed.